Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, and welcome to another edition of the Don and Ron program. Ron Edwards, coming to you from the Twin Cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul. My co-host, Mr. Allen, is on assignment, will not be with us this evening, but we hope to bring you an hour of informative information, reflections, news, updates, and et cetera, if you will. First and foremost, we will be looking closely at what appears to be an offer of American assistance, which sometimes is hard to judge if, in fact, it is American intervention and political and military meddling, but only time will tell. But we want to start out this evening's program by congratulating our co-host, Mr. Donald Allen, who, as we said, is on assignment. Mr. Allen, the recipient of a couple of awards from Hamline University, where he is a graduate student, if you will, for his journalistic activities, writing for the school paper, the Oracle, as it is referred to. And so we just want to indicate congratulations to Mr. Allen. We know next week he'll probably be giving us a little bit more details on both of these awards that were presented to him Monday, if I'm not mistaken. And also we want to congratulate Don for what will be a fall debut in a kind of Comedy Central format. He and two other individuals will be doing a kind of a conversation piece, if you will, on the politics of the day, kind of along the lines of, as we said just minutes ago, Comedy Central, if you will. One will be a Republican, one will be a Democrat. The moderator will be, I'm not quite sure what, but I assume the moderator is either a Democrat or Republican, so it'll be interesting to see how the balance is maintained, though he may be a attended, if you will. Mr. Johnson, Mr. Nelson, and Mr. Allen. Now, by the way, those are three real good, pure American names, right? Johnson, Nelson, and Allen, if you will. So no one can accuse them of being un-American, if you will. But the program, according to Mr. Allen's websites, will commence sometime in the early fall. I guess that means September, if you will. And they will discuss the political going-ons that are taking place here, not only locally, but I assume across the country, and maybe even on the world stage, particularly in light of the developments over the last number of weeks, particularly the situation in the Ukraine. Of course, by September, we could be at war, if you will. As we've said before, any miscalculation could be catastrophic for the safety of all concerned. Russia announcing earlier today that they are pulling some of their troops. They have almost in between 40,000 and 50,000 Russian elite troops are on the border with Ukraine. It appears that the city of Odessa, which is in the southern part of the Ukraine and which is Ukraine's only seaport, if you will, if Odessa falls to pro-Russian activists, the Ukraine will truly become a landlocked nation, if you will, having no access to the sea. So it'll be interesting to see just how this plays out. A lot of violence in Odessa, if you will, over the last 3 to 4 days. At least 70 people officially have lost their lives in fighting between pro-Ukrainian and pro-Russian factions within Odessa. We already know the history of what happened in the Crimea, which was annexed to Mother Russia, if you will, and there has been fighting in the eastern Ukraine in close proximity to the Ukrainian-Russian border there in the east of Ukraine. All of this being watched closely, United States hands basically tied to some Republican congressmen and senators wanting to revert to the days of Korea and Vietnam and places like that. This is not a situation commensurate with Grenada or Panama, if you will. Russia is more than a match for the United States militarily, and the Ukrainians are not, and for all practical purposes, neither is NATO, if you will. If a decision is made by Russia to unleash tactical nuclear weapons, we're all in trouble, if you will. So one keeps their eye on that particular international scene. Angela Merkel, the German chancellor, who some were saying just 3 to 4 or 5 weeks ago had a good relationship with President Putin and could talk to him, could possibly even get inside of his head, if you will, not understanding and remembering that Vladimir Putin is a trained intelligence operative, if you will, was a colonel in the KGB. The man loves playing the chess game of international intrigue and et cetera. So all of that being closely watched. We have additional situations in China. North Korea, once again, hitting the drum of nuclear proliferation, if you will. North Koreans may be on the verge of detonating another nuclear device to remind the world that they too are a nuclear power. I mean, let's understand, any nation, be it India or Israel or Great Britain or France, and certainly the United States and Russia, China definitely, who has a nuclear capability as a world power that can extend far outside of their so-called regional influences. And we saw that over the last year and a half as the North Koreans have sent ballistic missiles down the so-called Pacific Corridor with the possibility of now having intercontinental ballistic missiles that can, you know, that can reach San Francisco, as an example, and definitely Hawaii. So we see all of this happening, and we just hope that the Obama administration is in a position to manage, quote-unquote, these international affairs. We have the situation in Africa. No one is paying much attention. We first reported it here almost 2 years ago. The United States creates what is called the U.S. Africa Command. General Carter Ham, who is headquartered, that's interesting, you know, this is called the U.S. African Command, but the headquarters for the Africa Command is in Germany, if you will. You would think that they would have been able, they being the United States, would have been able to have reached a agreement, a treaty agreement, and et cetera, to have put the headquarters in, well, let's say Nigeria, if you will. Nigeria, along with South Africa, as it pertains to the Black African continent, having the two most powerful armies on that continent, if you will. And South Africa, by the way, still having nuclear capabilities. No one likes to talk about that because that means that black folk in the southern part of Africa have that capabilities. But with this latest problem in the northern region, which is represents a heavy concentration of Muslims, the kidnapping of young school-age girls, if you will, an attack today on a school, people actually hacked and burnt to death, if you will, by Islamic factions or militant or militia groups, if you will. United States indicating a couple hours ago that it has offered, along with the UK, the United Kingdom, technical military support to find these women, over 200, if you will, who now may be in Cameroon, which is on the eastern border of Nigeria, if you will, for those of you that know how to read your maps. Cameroon's government indicates that they have no knowledge, independent knowledge, of the presence of any Nigerian nationals who have been kidnapped inside of Cameroon's sovereign borders, if you will, with the United States, which it's puzzling, by the way, on this particular question. The United States already has, as we just said a number of minutes ago, a very significant military presence in Black Central Africa. It has been there for quite some time, if you will. And consequently, that presence, that military presence, has allowed the United States to have a certain influence, basically concentrating in what is called the Central African Republic, which is not that far. In fact, Cameroon would be the country in between Nigeria and the Central African Republic. Central African Republic touches the Congo, the Congo Republic, if you will, and et cetera, Chad, the nation of Chad, of course, South Sudan, and et cetera. And so American military elite personnel, commandos, if you will, elite forces, and et cetera, have been back and forth in that particular area, specifically in the area of Burundi, if you will, an area which is familiar to those that have studied some of the tragedies of Black Africa. And so it's rather interesting. The United States is indicating that it is prepared to help. It's kind of like money. Not all money is good money. Not all help is good help, if you know what we are saying. But we find it interesting the anxiety of some within the United States to get involved in Black Africa. Of course, enormous resources in the whole of Africa, from the Mediterranean to the Atlantic and the Indian Ocean, if you will, tremendous resources that certainly could be capitalized upon as a part of continuing to support the Western economy. Notice I didn't say African economy. Just all kinds of minerals and et cetera, which certainly would allow a significant profit, if you will, on the profit sheets for big European and American corporations, if you will, multinationals, as they like to refer to themselves. There's been a concern for some time, last couple of years, about the influence of China in Black Central Africa, if you will, particularly in the area of, Liberia, the Ivory Coast, if you will, those countries which are technically to the west of Nigeria, if you will, Ghana, if you will, Guinea, Bassoon. Chinese have had some significant influence there. Nigeria, along with South Africa, is probably the most stable economic and, to some degree, military in that hemisphere, that part of the world, if you will. But some of the other nations have had coup d'etats, changes of government, or long-standing dictatorships. You know, some strong men have been in power for 25, 30, 40 years, if you will, and have basically scuttled, if you will, or obstructed the economic growth as well as the intellectual growth. That's part of what the situation is in northern Nigeria, where the Islamic militants, if you will, maintain that young girls do not have the right to be educated, go to school, and et cetera. And this brings into play something that is also interesting as kind of an aside. If you're looking for nice accommodations in Hollywood, you probably can find a room without any problem at the Beverly Hilton, which is being boycotted, picketed, and et cetera, after it became known that the hotel, which is owned by a sultan, as he is called, of a small principality on the island of Borneo, if you will, in the so-called Indian Ocean, has indicated the importance of Sharia law, if you will, which is a very brutal application of Islamic interpretation of law, particularly pertaining to punishment, to women, and et cetera. So all of these things in play tonight across the world, if you will. And it is something that we, as Americans, particularly those Americans who send their sons and daughters to defend democracy, if that's what you want to call it, must must make a decision once again if this country shall be engaged in conflict. The Defense Department a couple hours ago indicated that the United States would help track and discover the kidnappers, if you will, by using drones and et cetera. Of course, that's another infatuation that we have. Many on the conservative right can't wait to get these clones, in the air, particularly here in the continental United States. I tell you, it's a devastating weapon. It is a secret assassin, if you will. And if they can get by with it, they can start using it in law enforcement, et cetera. Of course, you know, if it happens to shoot a missile or a rocket into a family car by accident, I mean, what the heck, you know. that's the way that that it goes. It's really not amusing. It's dangerous. But the United States is already bringing its Atlantic fleet into play. There will be American aircraft coming off of at least one American aircraft carrier now in that part of the world running recon missions and et cetera, and then the drones will be brought into play. But the Pentagon says that the United States will not have boots on the ground. We all know that's a lie. No, that's just not true. The United States has had boots on the ground, as we said just a couple minutes ago, for quite some time, for over a year in that part of the world, running recons, if you will, analyzing the political, but more importantly, the military strength of at least 8 or 9 or 10 black African countries for what some prognosticators indicate is the next coming conflict, if you will, contrary to those in Washington who maintain that we need to turn our eyes towards the Far East, if you will, and Asia and et cetera. Rest assured, my friends, that big corporate, both USA and Europe, if you will, along with the Chinese, if you will, to a lesser degree the Japanese, have their sights set on a somewhat unstabilized black Africa. And we repeat again, enormous, enormous resources there. And the possibility of the profit side of these multinational corporations increasing 300 to 400-fold, if you will, is a strong possibility, while the black population of Africa continues to decline. You know, if we have another drought, if you will, another infectious disease. By the way, you don't hear much about the Ebola epidemic that broke out about a month ago. The only reason we were made known of it here in the United States because a couple people got on aircraft flying back to the United States and brought the Ebola into the United States. And so the alert went out. And then it became known that in places like Liberia, the death toll had increased extremely sharply, and that the World Health Organization had been running into some resistance about getting the necessary medication and et cetera into these black countries in Western Africa. And I noticed that there has been somewhat of a kind of an embargo, if you will, restricted or selective news gathering and et cetera in this entire scenario. But we watch closely that, as we watch many other parts of this planet of ours. Armies seem to be on the march and on the move. Of course, the most dangerous spot right now is the Ukraine. It's pure and simple. Any miscalculation there, and the Russians will do whatever they feel is necessary to protect their sphere of influence, national interest, and et cetera. And if that means using tactical nuclear weapons, you see, we are not as well versed on what kind of weapons can be, specialized and what kinds of weaponry are available for low-yield nuclear attacks and et cetera, starting with cruise missiles and et cetera. And we don't pay the attention that we should as a planet, if you will, as a people. And these nuclear tactical weapons can kill, you know, 2 or 3 million people just like that. So you don't want to be a doomsday predictor, but you need to watch closely because it's quite clear that at this point President Putin is not a man to be bluffed, nor is he bashful about his nationalism, if you will. The return of Mother Russia to the great days of the so-called Soviet Union and to the days of Tsarist Russia, if you will, when, quote-unquote, Russia's desire was much of Europe, if you will, and Asia. No one seems to really pay any attention to how physically, landmass, how large Russia is and how large Russia has, quote-unquote, been, if you will. Well, before we move into local events here in the Twin Cities, particularly in Minneapolis, we will be talking in about the next 15 minutes of the another summit. There's going to be another summit to deal with the violence. By the way, tomorrow morning's edition, if you will, of the Minneapolis Star Tribune has a very angry Council President Barb Johnson, but talking in terms of what is a priority and what should be a priority and what is not a priority. And it appears that law and order is the suggested priority by the Council President as opposed to the issue of equity, which, you know, we know that's all kind of a sham anyways. But let us move back into the sports scene very quickly. Donald Sterling, owner of the Los Angeles Clippers, who have moved on to the second round of the NBA playoffs in the Western Conference, basically indicating at this point that he intends to fight any attempt to force him out as owner of the Los Angeles Clippers, if you will. Donald S. has the finances. The man is worth about $1.8 billion, maybe $2 billion, if you will. He certainly has the assets that if he wants to do what he is being encouraged by certain factions, that he certainly has the ability to tie this thing up in litigation. It will basically kill the franchise, if you will. I don't know any African-American players that would want to play on a team with Donald Sterling, quote-unquote, in a leadership role. Saw an excellent piece. We will take a call on 763-228-1748, if you will. Elgin Baylor, the 11-time All-Star Hall of Famer, if you will, first saw him when he was drafted by the then Minneapolis Lakers way back in 1959. Played here a couple years before the franchise was moved to Los Angeles. You know, a lot of people don't know the Lakers were originally formed 1947 here in Minneapolis as the Minneapolis Lakers. That was the team of George Mikan, Jim Pollard, Vern Mickelson, Whitey Skou, Slater Martin, and et cetera, some of the players of a great time. First African-American prior to Elgin Baylor, Ellis, and Fleming, three African-Americans who came on board in 1959. I remember we were in a state of shock around here. Big and beloved Bob Williams, who came on in 1957, if I'm not mistaken. So it took the Lakers about 5 years after the NBA had been integrated, if you will, by Walter Duke, Sweetwater Clifton, Ernie Cooper, and et cetera, who were identified by Commissioner Adam Silver last week when he announced that Donald Sterling was going to be banned for life as an owner and member of the so-called NBA's owner's family, if you will. Though there has been a slight tad of integration amongst the owners, NBA great Michael Jordan was allowed to buy a part of the Charlotte, and they will be the Charlotte Hornets next year, dropping the name Bobcats, if you will, cutting a deal with New Orleans, who became the Pelicans this 2013-2014 season. And so Michael Jordan is a part of the select inner circle, if you will, for publicity purposes, of the 30-member NBA ownership group. Of course, it's really 29 now because allegedly Donald Sterling, who is the longest serving owner, if you will, first purchasing his franchise in 1981. But anyways, interview by with Elgin Baylor and his very lovely wife this evening. CNN, they'll probably run it a couple more times tonight and certainly tomorrow. Elgin Baylor, a man who called attention to Donald Sterling for many years, though Elgin served with dignity and respect as the general manager of the Los Angeles Clippers, but was treated very poorly by Donald Sterling. In the interview just a couple hours ago on CNN, Elgin Baylor really laid it out. His wife was very forceful and helpful, if you will, in their joint recollections of the Donald Sterling era during the time that Elgin Baylor was the general manager. Elgin Baylor sued in 2009, if I'm not mistaken, unfortunate all-white jury there in California, and a judge who was certainly not sympathetic to certain evidence getting in against Donald Sterling. Elgin Baylor lost that lawsuit, but David Stern, who was then the commissioner of the NBA, and others are being painted as being concerned about Donald Sterling, but in reality, they really were not. I remember doing a piece on one of our radio programs 20 years ago about this man, Donald Sterling, things he was doing, how he was doing, and the disrespect he was showing to African Americans. In fact, we talked on our television program about an African-American ball player by the name of Davis, Ryan Davis, who unfortunately had to play for the Los Angeles Clippers back in the very late 90s, if I'm not mistaken, the early 2000s, before he just decided to get out of the game. He, like Elgin Baylor, but no one like Elgin Baylor, though, brought forward the details, the specificity, and et cetera, what kind of man, what kind of owner Donald Sterling was. But the system closed ranks around him, if you will. And, of course, Elgin Baylor was never offered an opportunity after he lost the lawsuit in 2009 to get back into basketball in the NBA. A very knowledgeable executive, administrator, and et cetera, but was clearly whiteballed, if you will, you know, by the owners and by the NBA. No one likes to talk about that, so it was interesting earlier this evening to see CNN do an exclusive interview with Elgin Baylor and his wife, which should help many younger African Americans get an insight into the fact that here is another African American who fought the battle, tried to call attention to institutional and individual racism, was denied justice, if you will, opportunity to have a series of misdeeds, disrespect, and et cetera corrected. It was business as usual, if you will. It certainly was not at the level of Trayvon Martin, but it, in many respects, was when you talk in terms of how the court case was handled in 2009. So Donald Sterling is going to fight this thing, if you will. His wife is playing Donald Sterling's wife, not the girlfriend, but the wife, playing a very interesting game of appearing to be sympathetic. Of course, she knows that she's looking at a nice split if the franchise is sold. Mr. Sterling and she will have to be given fair compensation, if you will. Some are quoting the price at about $530 million now, if you will. Tax bill would be about $160 million, if you will, which means they would have about, $370 million to split, to play with, if you will. And when you talk in terms of joint property in the state of California, if you will, they would basically split about $143 million apiece. You know, that would be fairly nice after taxes and everything. As we said, taxes would be about $169 million, which I assume they would split. So anyways, we continue to watch every attempt being made to keep our mindset on that, as well as the tragedies in Nigeria, if you will. because folks really don't want folks to pay a lot of attention to what is happening in the Ukraine, but things are intensifying, if you will, and given the shrewdness of President Putin, it's just a matter of time before the Russians take a decisive and specific action. Folks are now saying, as we said earlier, that it appears that the Ukrainian seaport city of Odessa will, in fact, be the next target of opportunity. And so all of this is certainly being watched very closely. As we said before, phone line open, 763-228-1748. We will answer any questions you may have on the subject matters that we have just discussed over the last half hour. We've got another half hour going. And we feel that it is germane, paramount, and et cetera to talk about this because it has so much to do with the safety of our city, the safety of our children, and the safety of us, if you will. Tomorrow morning's edition, Minneapolis Star Tribune, as we said in highlighting this earlier, will feature a story on Council President Barb Johnson's irritation at a committee of the whole meeting this afternoon at City Hall of the City Council. Apparently, somewhere or another, discussion emerged about an equity plan. That's been the cornerstone of the new council, if you will, and the so-called liberals. In fact, Elizabeth Glidden, clearly, and hold it just a second. Hello? This is he speaking.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Councilman, how you doing? Are you calling? Because we're on the air right now. Yeah, we're on the air. Yeah. But what I was calling you about, and that I have you, I don't want to embarrass you in any way and et cetera, but I was calling you in regards to the termination of Robin Lawler, a 30-year employee of the department this morning by Velma Corville. But let me do this because I'm quite sure you didn't realize we were on the air, and so I will call you at the conclusion of the program and talk to you in a more private manner. All right. Thank you, Councilman. All right. Take care. Bye-bye. That was a call from Councilman Vong Yang, Democrat Fifth Ward, who actually we were getting ready. I swear we did not stage this. We were getting ready to mention his name. He will be mentioned in the article in tomorrow morning's edition of the Star Tribune. As we said before, though, the phone line, 763-228-1748. That line is open for inquiries. Now on this issue that has become somewhat toxic in the Minneapolis City Council, and that is the council president's irritation with spending too much time on equity when they should be spending time on public safety, you know, dealing with crime and et cetera, and fighting the evil dark forces, you know, that are quote unquote terrorizing, according to the council president, North Minneapolis. We find it always peculiar that everyone just concentrates on North Minneapolis. Violence is taking place all across the city, but there have been a lot of shootings. There have been 22 straight days of gunfire in which at least, you know, 70% of that gunfire leads to some kind of casualty, if not, in fact, a fatality. And I'm quite sure that all citizens of the city of Minneapolis and those that come into the city to go to work and et cetera are concerned about what is happening. And that's the reason that the friction that emerged this morning or slash afternoon at the city council and that council president Barb Johnson is quoted as, again, we use the word extremely irritated about the amount of time. Now, here's the problem about the amount of time. Council member and vice president of the council, Elizabeth Glidden, a so-called liberal, received $100,000 from one of our foundations to, quote-unquote, study and then move towards the implementation of equity for our beloved city, if you will. And God knows that, and as a former chairman of the Minneapolis Civil Rights Commission on two occasions over many, many years, I speak with experience and detail, and also having been the federal court's monitor for 20 years of the fire department and being monitor for 5 years on part of the Department of Justice of the police department just a half a decade ago. This commentator and program host is very, very familiar with the imbalance, if you will, that exists within this this city, this community, and its political structure. As we said before, phone lines are open, 763-228-1748, if you have any questions about equity and et cetera. Now, this is interesting because in the conversation you have heard between myself and Councilman Yang, earlier this morning, Velma Quadvel, the director of the Civil Rights Department, reappointed just a month ago, forced out a longtime employee, a woman by the name of Robin Lawler, who was first involved with the civilian review process and was a former police officer. See, Robin thinks people forgot that, a former police officer in Toledo, Ohio, before she moved here to the Twin Cities and married a current law enforcement officer who now works for the Transit Authority. But Robin Lawler apparently was caught up in a situation in which she was determined to be a staff member of the Civil Rights Department who was passing information to a couple of former civil rights employees who are in fact suing the Civil Rights Department of the City of Minneapolis. In fact, one of them, in fact, we identified her and talked about her in our column in the Minnesota Spokesman Recorder about a month ago, a woman by the name of Kristen White, a Caucasian attorney, if you will, very bright young lady, who was encouraged to falsify and commit a felony by the Civil Rights Department and by Velma Quadvel and others at top level of the administration in the Civil Rights Department by falsifying information relevant to contract compliance, the requirements to swear to and attest to the fact that you were, as a contractor, were doing what you were supposed to do, et cetera. She declined, and she reported the criminal suggestion, if you will, to the Human Resources Department. Unfortunately, Ms. White, Kristen White, did not realize that the director of the Human Resources Department, a woman by the name of Ferguson, who had just come in a couple months before, was a very dear, close friend of Velma Quadvel. They, in fact, had served on the YW's board of directors. In fact, they may still serve on it, as far as I can tell. And the next day, on a Friday, if I'm not mistaken, when Ms. Kristen White arrived for work, she was fired on the spot and walked out of the door, in other words, by Civil Rights Department staff, and she has since sued. Well, she gave testimony before Councilman Yang's committee. Councilman Yang, who just called here about 15 minutes ago, is the chair of the Public Safety Committee, which the Minneapolis Civil Rights Department reports to. There was a public hearing about a month ago. People on both sides showed up to either oppose or support Velma Quadvel's reappointment. But after that hearing and after the committee vote of 4-1 and 1, with only the chairman, which is kind of interesting, only the chairman voting not to reaffirm or reappoint Velma Quadvel, a group of comprised of Ms. Quadvel, her deputy director, and a officer or a official of the powerful M.A. Mortensen Company, and et cetera, went to have some cocktails, if you will. And upon arriving at the particular watering hole, came across, according to, you know, the reports, came across two individuals, one being Miss White, who had just testified, and the other being Robin Lawler, exchanging documents and information. And it appears now that there has been a retaliation because of Miss Lawler's conduct. And so consequently, this morning, after some 30 years or thereabouts with the city of Minneapolis, she was terminated from employment, just that quick, if you will. Now, that brings into play something else, because in tomorrow morning's edition of the paper, Miss Corvell will be quoted as making a strong statement about the importance of dealing with the issues of equity and employment and our young people. In fact, she makes a statement in which she's quoted that, you know, if we would have dealt with some of this 30 years ago, we would not be faced with the level of crime and et cetera that we are confronted with today. And what will we say 30 years from now when we're still faced with this problem? Well, that was an excellent statement. Only problem is it's bogus. It is not consistent with the performance and application of the civil rights laws of this city by Ms. Corvell and her, and even previous directors, if you will. It's just not consistent in any shape, form, if you will. But it comes at a troubling time because we are seeing, and within the leadership of the African-American community, which we will touch on in the remaining 18 or 19 minutes of tonight's program, we first talked about on this program with our co-host, Mr. Allen, less than a month ago about a peace summit which was held at 1250 West Broadway, which is the school district's headquarters, bright new headquarters, which was built without African-American contractors or without African-American workers of any significant number, maybe two or three, if you will, over a two-year period. I mean, that's a factual number, if you will. And it was interesting because on the oversight committee for the district that was to, quote-unquote, provide guidance to the district to make sure that equal opportunity, equity, and et cetera, you know, was something that was guaranteed, was one Velma Corvell, who sat there and gave aid and comfort to the violation and violations of the laws and ordinances of this city. I mean, folks are aware of that. M.A. Mortensen had a little subcommittee of civil rights leaders that they brought in. You guys know who you are. And they basically did the same thing. And what happens is that if at any point in time during the construction of the district headquarters at 1250 West Broadway, a issue emerged with regards to the absence of African Americans and others of color working on site, these individuals, these two separate committees, one controlled by M.A. Mortensen, the general contractor, the other by the school district's own internal mechanism under the custody and control of James Burroughs, who at that time was, you know, the construction facilitator and overseer reported to the office of the superintendent. No one dealt with the fact that African Americans were not being employed. And so to this hypocrisy that I see in place, I've already read the quotes by Ms. Corvell that will be published. In fact, it's online right now for those of you that are listening and need to hear it. It's online right now. It is just the height of hypocrisy, misrepresentation, dishonesty, and et cetera. But things are really escalating to this extent. After the so-called summit, which was basically attended by a very small number of African Americans, 11, as we were informed, and the actual count in the room and the individuals that were identified, if you will, there was discussion about a number of other summits that needed to take place. Of course, the Somalis, if you will, and by the way, for those of you in the Somali community, a heck of a law and order conference is going on right now in Seattle, Washington, which has the third largest Somali population in the United States. And they are talking about the Somali problem, law and order, et cetera, and in the course of discussions over the last couple of days. This is almost a week-long conference in Seattle. And there's at least one Somali police officer from the Minneapolis Police Department. You only have four. One of the discussions there, if you will, is the disturbing number of unsolved homicides of Somalis here in Minneapolis over the last 2.5 years, 18 unsolved Somali murders, if you will, unsolved cold cases, as they like to call them, which is raising questions. In fact, my good friend Chuck Wexler of Perth, the Police Research Institute in Washington, D.C., came here last week to bring some semblance of order, if you will, to what is happening over there in Cedar Riverside. And, of course, we're also still waiting for a formal report from the state fire marshal on the explosion on January 1. Some are saying on some of the international blogs that it actually was a bombing, a retaliation by Kenyan intelligence services for activities that were committed inside of Kenya, which led to the deaths of over 100 people and a large number of children. And so folks have been watching closely the instability within the Somali community, as an example. And so this conference was put together in Seattle, which is has the third largest behind Minneapolis and Columbus, Ohio, of Somalis in the United States. But it's too bad that some of the elected political leaders or appointed political leaders of the Somali community did not ask to be more significantly briefed, if you will, about the purpose of the conference. Yes, it's going on in Seattle, Washington, about 25 minutes from downtown Seattle, right there by the Seattle-Tacoma Airport. And it is a very, very interesting conference that is going on, and there are some plans afoot to deal with, quote-unquote, the Somali problem, quote-unquote. But in the meanwhile, the current federal prosecutor here in the state of Minnesota has called his forces together. And one of the things that's happened here is that a number of special kinds of operations have been put in place under the offices, the auspices, if you will, of Project Soul Train. I mean, really, that's the name of the activity, Project Soul Train. The purpose of Project Soul Train is to develop, cultivate, and call into play, I hate to say it like this, my friends, you know, it is so distasteful, African-American leaders who have become, quote-unquote, well, confidential informants for the federal authorities, providing information, names, and et cetera, to the authorities. Not all that information is factual. Some of this is tied into, unfortunately, protecting others who are in a like position of criminal activity and et cetera. It's kind of puzzling, but I've seen in my many years, I've seen the federal government do this. I saw it at play a lot in the 1960s as black organizations, be it the Black Panthers, you know, or the Freedom Riders and et cetera, or the NAACP or the Urban League and et cetera, played against each other. Operatives brought in some cases, military operatives come in. They disseminate information, falsehoods, and et cetera. But what has happened in the last couple of weeks, the Department of Justice, through its U.S. attorney here in the Federal District of Minnesota, has been provided with names and of individuals who have been involved allegedly in criminal activities, though there is a Pacific gang and individuals whose name never emerged in a very, very classified meeting here in our beloved city approximately 9 days ago as of this past Monday. Today is Wednesday. This becomes a significant concern based on the fact that we have a pitched battle going on here in our cities in the metropolitan area, particularly in Minneapolis, amongst competing organizations, gangs, if you will, and et cetera. And what no one has paid attention to, using the, and this is amazing, if you will, my friends, and like I said, we've got about 12 minutes left. utilizing the presence of baseball's Major League All-Star game here in mid-July, the Civil Liberties Union finally woke up and saw what was happening, because what has been put in place as a part of what, you know, supposedly is an agreement between Major League Baseball, the city of Minneapolis, and et cetera, are designated areas that are called clean areas. They are called clean areas. They are areas which include all of downtown, areas immediately adjacent, and et cetera. And these clean areas, according to the Civil Liberties Union, this is not anything that, you know, making up here on the Donnie Ronnie program. Civil Liberties Union, in a copyrighted story, what was it, Sunday's edition for my friends at the Star Tribune? Sunday's edition, the head of the American Civil Liberties Union said, hey, this is a serious constitutional violation of the rights of citizens. That really what they're saying is the rights of white citizens, because some of the things that have been are going to be required of these clean zones, if you will be the inability of a lot of people of color not to be present other than for the purposes of work or the purposes of transferring from one bus to the other or one train to the other, if you will, to be in downtown for about a 15-day period, if you will. In fact, for 5 days, even after the All-Star game ends, the clean zone, if you will, safe zone, apartheid zone, colored zone, whatever zone you want to call it, will continue to be in force, and the police will be able to exercise a multiplicity of quote-unquote activities and restraints, if you will. And so when it emerged in Sunday's edition of the paper, I said, oh, my, I wonder how this happened and how our civil rights organizations missed it, if you will. But then the information came forward that there had already been an understanding that these zones would be put in place, and that, quote-unquote, the African-American leadership would not speak to it. For those of you that are scrambling in your computers, it was in Sunday's edition, front page, Twin Cities and Region. That's the B section. And, in fact, the headline was, for All-Star Game, what rights did we give up? And I wondered how many people paid attention to it, you know. I imagine that not necessarily a lot of them did, though it was placed in the right place, the Civil Liberties Union of Minnesota. And it's one that if you still have your Sunday paper or you know how to get on that computer and Google it up, you may want to read it. Now, for the African-American community, you need to be advised that there is already an enemies list, if you will. Names were provided to the U.S. attorney a week ago this past Monday, if you will. And those names are individuals. In fact, Monday's edition. I just love making sure that we can document and authenticate, because we've also been busy here in the last couple of days talking in terms of Mexican terrorists who have come into Minnesota asking about their drugs and et cetera. We call your attention to yesterday's edition, Minneapolis Star Tribune, Mexican cartel tortures two in St. Paul. Man, so much going on that one can't keep up. But there was also an article in Monday's edition of the paper in which there was this highly touted press conference talking about three African-Americans who had been arrested because of their involvement in a series of criminal activities, shootings, and et cetera. And folks were kind of like, yeah, okay, we need to, you know, make sure that everything and everybody is safe in our beloved city. The only problem with that is that some of those names had already been given to federal authorities, if you will, kind of kind of a in support of, quote unquote, to clean up our streets. And in some regards, my friends, that is what tomorrow morning's edition of the Minneapolis Star Tribune will be hinting at with regards to the friction that unraveled, if you will, at today's City Council meeting of the whole, is that there are some factions, particularly in North Minneapolis, there are far-right groups who are demanding that Mayor Betsy Hodges and the police chief, Janae Harto, turn their attention to a full-scale offensive against, quote-unquote, perceived, in some cases real, most cases perceived, Negro, black belligerence and a threat to the public safety, if you will. And police will be back in full force attempting to rid the streets, if you will, of this dangerous element of African Americans, if you will, that represent a threat to the security of our city, particularly as it pertains to an anticipated $145 million that will be coming into the city during the course of Major League Baseball. A couple of additional news follow-ups as we begin to wind down. Be advised, for those that have been wondering what has happened, is that attorneys for, and by the way, we're coming up on the anniversary in 2 days of the tragic circumstances surrounding the brutal death of Terrence Terrell Franklin, T.T. Franklin, if you will, for those of you that still remember these kinds of things. A civil lawsuit has been filed against Lucius Peterson and Michael Mehta, M-E-A-T-H, police officers in the Minneapolis Police Department, part of the SWAT team that was involved in the, well, actually they blew T.T. Franklin's head off, really. I mean, they blew his head apart. He was not armed, if you will, et cetera, but you know, there are folks who can go back and take a look at the newspaper articles of May 11th, 12th, 13th, 14th, and thereafter. But attorneys for the Franklin family, Walter Lewis Franklin II, a trustee for the estate of Terrence Terrell Franklin, have filed against the forenamed individuals. This case will probably go to trial in about 6 months. In the federal court for the Federal District of Minnesota, if you will. But there's a lot of discussion about the tampering with evidence and et cetera during the course of the investigation of the tragic circumstances surrounding the tragic death of T.T. Franklin. But I'm aware there were a lot of young people out there who were very concerned about his death, the circumstances, the brutality of it, the viciousness, the lethalness, if you will, of blowing the side of a man's head off by firing 6 shots from an MP5 submachine gun, and etc. And so some had thought that maybe nothing would happen, if you will, but we can indicate to you that a lawsuit has been filed on behalf of the family and particularly his surviving son. So, appreciate the opportunity to be with you. Hopefully my associate, Mr. Allen, who is preparing for Comedy Central, if you will be back with us next week. And, of course, the phone lines always are open for anyone that has any questions about the subject matter that we talk about. Let us continue to stay strong and vigilant. And in the remaining 55 seconds, let us continue, Black Minneapolis, to pray for your salvation, your survival, and your safety. On behalf of my co-host, Mr. Don Allen, who is on assignment, I am Ronald A. Edwards. This is the Ron and Don Show coming to you from the Twin Cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul. We'll be back with you next week.